This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Jordy Kalata from there in the state of Louisiana, host of ESPN Radio, joining us now here on Three Man Front, the Bud Light Seltzer Hotline. Terrace Marshall Jr., a little bit of a surprise for folks around here that he decides he doesn't want to play for the remainder of the season and get ready for the NFL draft. How was that received there, not only in the state of Louisiana, but by LSU fans that you've talked to, Jordy?
It was a body shot, fellas, for sure, to come home on Sunday from College Station after a pretty brutal loss to Texas A&M, in which your defense finally put together a game in which, you know, you could have won against a big-time opponent, Texas A&M being number five, and then having one of your best players, arguably your best player on your roster, Terrace Marshall Jr., inform Ed Orgeron in the program that he was going to step away for the final three games of the season. Look, I don't think they expected it at all. Marshall was a guy who addressed the team just 2 weeks ago and told a team only meeting that he had the opportunity to opt out, and he was sticking around and wanted to compete and wanted to play alongside his teammates. I think that the people at the next level got to him and said that they had seen enough on the college level, and ultimately he made a business decision earlier this week, and he will not be available for LSU, which is pretty devastating for their offense.
Jordy, what's that roster going to look like top to bottom when LSU faces off against Alabama this weekend from a scholarship player perspective?
Light, Cole. When you look at it, it is dangerously thin when you look at the numbers. I think they'll have 58 scholarship players available. When Orgeron talked to the media yesterday, I don't know if he did it on purpose or he just accidentally let it slip, but he said he had 59 guys available on scholarship on Saturday night in College Station. That was including Terrace Marshall. You know, you take him away, and now you're looking at sub 60 again, going up against the number one team in the country. They're dangerously thin in spots that are crucial. Offensive line, linebacker, safety. Their numbers are down, and Cole, to me, that's the difference in the consistency with LSU year in, year out, and this predates the Orgeron tenure. I mean, this goes back to Les Miles in the sense of roster management, where LSU is selling on the recruiting trail 3 years and done, 3 years to the NFL, when really it's turning out to be the bane of the program, in the sense of you just don't have the numbers when you look at your competition. I mean, you know, SEC teams are on average around 78 to 82 guys on scholarship, where LSU has competed, you know, the majority of the years at sub 70, and now right now looking at, you know, 58 guys going into an Alabama matchup on Saturday night.
For the first time, we've heard some criticisms of the defense this year. Orgeron's been obviously frustrated about that side of the ball. But for the first time, we actually heard him make a critical comment towards Steve Ensminger on the offensive side. Do you think that this is something that long-term that they're going to have to take a look at the offensive side, or was this just the frustration of a very difficult season kind of coming to a head the other night in College Station?
Well, look, I think it's a combination of a lot of things when you look at the frustration levels of LSU in the program. When you look at specifically at the offense and Ensminger, you know, you wonder what this relationship and what the expectation was when it was initially put together. I think that, you know, Orgeron looked to Ensminger when he was placed here on the interim basis back in 2016, and he was a guy that he trusted. He was somebody that he was comfortable with. He started as a coach, as a graduate assistant at McNeese, and Steve Ensminger was on that staff in the late 70s, early 80s. I mean, these guys go back a long time with one another. But, you know, Steve was very open about saying, look, I don't want the offensive coordinator job at LSU. He's fine being the tight ends coach, because he would famously say around town, they don't fire the tight ends coach. But he was also somebody that was a Swiss Army knife for LSU and Orgeron, a guy that could coach the quarterbacks, that could coach the receivers, could have input on the offensive game plan. So he needed him on staff. And once things went south with Matt Canada, he kind of turned to him again for the same thing. And once he placed him as the offensive coordinator permanently, I think it was under the agreement of this wasn't going to be the long-term answer to this. I think that's why you saw guys like Joe Brady. I think, you know, the plan definitely was to have Brady in place as a co-offensive coordinator this season. Once he turned out to be a lightning-in-the-bottle guy, he jumps to the NFL. Then they bring in Russ Callaway, who you guys are familiar with. And I think it's the same type of role that they want to develop Callaway into, becoming an offensive coordinator and a play caller for LSU, just because, you know, Ensminger doesn't have – he doesn't have this yearning desire to be the play caller at this level long term. He's been in the game a long time, and he understands that, you know, this is a young man's game, and he would be around from Orgeron as an analyst and somebody he trusts. But I think his days as the offensive coordinator are running out.
Jordy, with this year and everything involved, whether it be coaching moves, whether it be opt-outs, guys leaving, COVID numbers, the record in general, where are LSU fans? Where would you say the consensus of LSU fans are as opposed to where they were, I don't know, several months ago after winning a national championship with Coach O?
Yeah, it's been incredible. When you look at just the turn that the program, the feeling, the popularity of the coach has taken in just a short time. I think people right now are a little turned off on the program, in the sense of the USA Today article that was published a couple of weeks back. And though some of those things aren't on the current staff's watch, it's still something that permeates throughout the program. It's something that has gone relatively unaddressed. You look at the play on the field, you know, you look at Terrace Marshall. We had Orgeron on this morning on off the bench and asked him if that was an indictment on the culture of Marshall's decision. And he defended the program in the sense of said it's still, you know, on pace and wanting to build championships. But the feeling around, the program from the fan base standpoint, from the supporters, the boosters, top alumni, is concerned. And I think that is felt throughout every level right now, whether it be from fundraising to renewal of tickets to just feedback to the administration that they receive on a daily basis throughout, you know, emails and phone calls. That is something that is being talked about very loudly throughout our community right now.
All right, Jordy, I'm interested to know where you think LSU goes at quarterback moving forward. Obviously, T.J. Finley's got a ton of talent. We've seen that in certain spots. But I'm watching Max Johnson in that game last week, and I'm thinking, this dude's kind of crafty, man. Like, he moves around the pocket a little bit. He's got pretty good zip on his ball when he gets it out. Has a good feel for when and where pressure's coming, how to avoid it. Keeps his eyes downfield. What's the end result of this LSU quarterback situation?
I think it is Johnson because of that, his versatility. He gives you options. He gives you the ability to run or throw it on any given down. He came out of that system in Georgia. His dad is Brad Johnson, the Super Bowl winning quarterback with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, he's kind of a protege. I mean, he's a guy that has been taught and bred the position for a long time. And you can see when he's out there that once he gets in a groove, you know, and the play calling is adapted to his style, you know, he feels very comfortable. Finley just has those things that you can't coach. A lot of those things like Jamarcus had. I mean, he puts on the pads and he stands up in the pocket. I mean, he's nearly 6'8". His release point's almost at 7 feet. He's big, strong, and he's a guy that's, you know, I mean, he's played some snaps. I think they're still trying to figure out what they want to do there. I asked him specifically the question this morning, Cole, on what he was looking for this week and the decision how he was going to make it for Saturday night. And he said, you know, a lot of it depended on preparation this week. He was not ready to name a starter. He sees a lot of similarities in what they do. But I think it's Johnson, just personally speaking, trying to answer your question here. I think that's what he wants. I think somebody that can, if he gets in trouble, he can run it, but also has the skill set to make the throws. And I think Johnson probably fits that mold. You know, Finley came on strong in fall in the fall. I mean, people were talking about who was going to be the backup to Miles Brennan because Brennan was the starter. And, you know, I mean, throughout the summer and through the early part of fall camp, it was always Johnson. It was never Finley. And then the closer games got, he started to talk about P.J. Finley a little more. And then once he had to go to a backup, Finley was no doubt the guy. But I think, you know, once he's seen more of a serving sample, you know, more of a sample size here, he's looking at Johnson and says he just gives him a little bit more durability. It gives him a little bit more of an option standpoint that they can run and throw it, and I think that's what he wants.
In regards to Saturday night, most people are predicting an Alabama victory against LSU, but when you talk to your fans, people that listen to your radio show on a daily basis, what are they expecting from Alabama on Saturday night? Not that they're trying to avenge that last year's loss, but what do they anticipate Alabama will bring to the table in regards to maybe the score on Saturday night?
I think people are expecting a blowout. You know, I mean, there are some Baton Rouge connections. There are some Louisiana connections with the Alabama football program, obviously. I mean, Dylan Moses is from Baton Rouge. Chris Allen, who has become, you know, one of their fast-rising players this season, is out of Southern Lab right here in Baton Rouge. Devonta Smith, you know, the best wide receivers from Amite, Louisiana. I mean, Christian Harris, their middle linebacker, is from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So, I mean, there's a lot of Louisiana ties on this Alabama team, and those guys were connected to that game last season. And, I mean, fellas, I mean, I'm one of the most guilty ones of being a loud-mouthed, arrogant prick of running my mouth throughout the offseason of talking trash to Alabama because of the way that LSU went into Tuscaloosa last season and beat them, Ogeron in the locker room afterwards saying, you know, Roll Tide, what, F you? You got Marcel Brooks running over to the recruiting section in the field at Bryan Denny telling guys to come to LSU. Next thing you know, Marcel Brooks is transferred out. LSU's in a world of trouble, and they got players opting out. And here comes Alabama, the number one team in the country, after, you know, seeing the LSU head coach on 60 Minutes and publish books about championship seasons and all that being a lot about the Alabama win. I think they're coming in here to prove a point. I think they're coming in. I mean, you saw it, Saban yesterday. He was asked about revenge games, and he says, we don't have those around here except for a few. And I think this is one of the few. I think this is, you know, I saw Christian Harris's dad. We were doing a post-game show a couple of weeks back, and this was when the game was still kind of in an uncertain status. They didn't know whether or not it was going to happen. And Harris's dad told us on the postgame, he said, look, man, all them boys are talking about in Tuscaloosa is trying to get that game in Baton Rouge set back up. So, you know, just reading between the lines, the state of LSU football, the mental state right now that they're in, Bama could come in here right, you know, this week and name this. Usually this town is on springs the week of LSU-Alabama. You can't get any work done. Nobody's doing, I mean, everybody is shutting down, looking for tickets, trying to get in the game. I bet you, you know, they're offering up 25% capacity. I bet you it's not 15% full on Saturday night.
Hey, I wanted you to explain this real quick, Jordy, because when I had Alabama a couple weeks ago, I actually did some research, and I didn't know this, and I know that our listeners don't know. It's one thing to go into Louisiana and get players. It's another thing to go into, like you said, Baton Rouge and get players. But when you say that Chris Allen attended Southern Lab and Christian Harris attended University Lab, explain to people what and actually where those high school campuses are.
So in the Baton Rouge community, there's two flagship universities, right? Southern University and obviously LSU. Southern Lab sits on Southern's campus, like on campus. They actually, I mean, you see both college and high school students interacting throughout the day. And University High, where Christian Harris, Dylan Moses, Tim Williams, who was there a couple of years ago at Alabama, are from, is on LSU's campus. When they kick a field goal, when they kick a field goal into their south end zone of their home stadium at University High, the football goes into the practice facility at LSU. They've got a manager standing on the track at the practice facility at LSU to catch the ball and bring it back into the field of play. When I'm telling you that Dylan Moses had full access to LSU's football program since he was in seventh grade, he would call Tommy Moffitt and tell him he wanted to work out at some whenever point in the day. and he would just have an access code to get into the building when he was in ninth grade because he was on campus. I mean, it was...
So you're telling me, and Dylan finished his career at IMG, which we all know down in Florida, but Nick Saban not only went to Louisiana, not only went to Baton Rouge, he went to the LSU campus and got Christian Harris, Dylan Moses, and other players over the years.
And took their best player. I mean, University High School has a reputation around the state of Louisiana as one of the top football programs in the state. And year in, year out, are pumping out D1 recruits. And Saban has gone in the past selective seasons and said, who's the best one? Christian Harris? Give me him. Give me Dylan Moses. Give me Tim Williams. And whoever's up next, they've got a safety there this year named Jordan Gilbert, who LSU was late to the party in offering because they've been going after these high-end guys, and Jordan Gilbert's sitting right there on their campus, and he can play at an SEC level. Saban was one of the first to offer him. It's a finalist list now that, you know, consists of LSU, Alabama. Alabama's coming on strong, so it's kind of the same old story here.
No, that's why Nick Saban's the GOAT. Great stuff. Jordy Kalata there from the state of Louisiana. I don't know how entertaining the game's going to be, but try to enjoy it. Hopefully fans down there will find some way to enjoy the day.
Thanks, fellas. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you. Jordy joining us on the Bud Light Seltzer Hotline. An easy drinking hard seltzer. Just 2 carbs and 100 calories. Try it in strawberry, lime, mango, black cherry, or grab the variety pack.
This is Three Man Front.